Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone. We are podcasting. I'm talking. I'm very happy to be talking today to a really lovely person and a very talented person. And those things often don't go together. It's Ellie Kemper.
Hi.
Here we are. Yes. And you're in New York City where you live.
Yes. City of Dreams.
It's City of Dreams. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
The City of
2023.
City of Dreams, although they're sort of indecipherable and really seem to do, they're nothing but anxiety dreams.
Yes, you know, exactly. Panic dreams.
Because, I mean, you've lived in New York. You never really have been an LA person, have you?
Well, I lived there for a few years. I think maybe five. I lived there for 5 years.
Oh, when you were doing
the office. Yes.
Yeah.
But that was even at first. It felt like, oh, are you actually living there? Or are you just living there while they're shooting?
Right.
But then I've been back here for a while. And before the office, I lived here for what? 9 years, I think?
Yeah.
So it's been, and you lived here. How long were you here?
I was there, like for a year and a half in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And then I was there from 93 to 2001.
Yeah.
So 8 years. And it took about 10 years living in LA before I really felt like I got to admit I live in LA now.
So you know, do like you? And right.
Yes.
And
I mean, I've been here for 20 years now. Right. I mean, 21, 22 years now.
Wow. So do you feel at all an allegiance to New York or like, but I'm actually, I know you didn't grow up here. But yeah, do you feel that?
Not anymore. Yeah. Not anymore. But honestly, I don't feel a particular allegiance to anything.
I don't think I do.
Anywhere. You know what I mean?
Not even the Midwest?
Oh, to the Midwest, definitely. I mean, I will always be a Midwesterner.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you probably.
I feel that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of fine with that. You know, I don't. Yeah. And I think everybody sort of has, you know, Southerners are always Southerners and Westerners are always, you know, like if you grow up in Idaho, you're always going to be sort of a cow person.
Exactly right.
But I have found though in going back to Illinois in the last few years, I enjoy it much more. And I feel like much more kind of. Just to have a soft spot. And it's not just Chicago and it's not just like a Cubs game. It's just, it's like driving around out in the rural parts of the suburbs. I just feel, you know, like, okay, this is, and I hate to say, but it's like, I belong here. Like, this is kind of where I should be.
Absolutely. And you're like, yeah. But I'm not. Do you mean you feel a soft spot now that you didn't used to feel upon returning or that you didn't feel when you lived there?
When I lived there, I was so young, you know, that I was dissatisfied with being alive.
Sure.
It wasn't like that, but no, now it's definitely, and it's also, it's just like changes in my life, you know.
Similar to the fantasy I have, like when I was 18, I thought, oh, I'm going to grow up and have 4 children. Well, I'm not going to have 4 children. I have 2 children and that's it. But similar to that. Even though I'm now 42, I do sort of feel like, no, but I'm going to like return to my hometown and raise my family there. But I'm already, I mean, it's not, maybe
You're
I will.
You're already doing it.
I'm already doing it. I probably won't. But there does feel when I do return, and of course I'm never there for long enough for things to get stressful, but it does feel like I go outside and things seem calmer. Like in New York, I mean, it's New York City. It's a major city. There's a lot going on at any given moment. And it's, you really feel like, especially as I get older, just the anxiety and like the, there's just, it's a stressful place to be at times.
I didn't used to get that. And then I think when I, you know, going back and forth, having lived there and going back and forth, you step out on the street and the, you know, cortisol levels, like the part the chemicals in your brain that says, I better keep an eye out because shit might go down. They just go up.
Oh my God.
When you step out, when you go to the corner to buy an orange,
I know,
you know, they jump up.
And
you
suddenly
know?
You're in, I don't know. I can't use this word. So I won't, it is, I can't believe I'm opening with or whatever, but this involves the use of the C word, like the worst word. Do you know what that is? Yes.
Yes. Okay. Sure.
I'm not going to say it. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to say the C word. But last year, I had just moved into this new apartment building. I live near Central Park. I was leaving my apartment at like 2 p.m. Like the sun is out. It was a weekday afternoon. I was going for a jog. Literally step outside and a man shouts at me, go back to Rikers Island, you C word. And I was like, I just walked out. So that doesn't happen to me in the Midwest.
were you wearing like an orange jumpsuit? Like what, Rikers
Island? Go back to Rikers Island. It was such a strange, was it an insult or was it? It was, and then I was like, I felt, he was on a bike. So it was very quick and he you know. you say you, I'm that is how Midwestern I am. I literally can't say that word.
Do you never say that word
or does it take
never in your life?
I guess when I told Michael, my Komen, what happened that day, I used that word, but I would never use that word. I do use, I mean, sometimes do I swear? I swear to like, but it feels like an act. Like it's like I'm inhabiting. I care. I don't know.
Right.
Do you, but that might, I don't want to like attribute that to the Midwest. It might just be my family. We didn't curse in my family. We still don't.
Oh, no. My mother swore like a truck driver.
Oh, like well, so there you go.
Yeah. My younger, and my dad too, but my mom especially would be like, to the point where when my younger brother and sister who are they're twins and they're 9 years younger than me, when they got to an age like 14, 15, they didn't swear because it was mom's thing.
Oh.
Like they wouldn't say fuck because like, no, that reminds them of mom.
Oh, like it was uncool.
Yeah. Or just that it was just like, it was distasteful.
Yeah.
Because my mom, I'm not exaggerating. There would be times when I'd be talking to her on the phone. And when my younger brother and sister were younger, I was out of the house. They were still there.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd be talking to me and she'd go, well, you know, this guy on this job said, hold on a second. Will you kids shut the fuck up? Anyway, so yeah, this guy said. And, you know, they're like eight or something, you know.
Were they well behaved?
Yeah, they were like, they're not.
I mean, it got the job done. Because you are one of how many? So you have the twin.
I have an older brother, and then I have a younger brother and sister that are actually my half brother and sister because they have a different dad. My mom from her second marriage.
She
had kids too.
Okay.
So one of four, but I'm kind of like the middle because they were sort of, you know, two for one.
Right.
And then my brother was the older one. Yeah.
Right. Yes, so.
And how many are you? And you were born in Kansas City, but grew up in St. Louis,
that's
right?
That's right. Yes. Born in Kansas, moved to St. Louis when I was in kindergarten. And I'm also one of four. I have an older brother, 2 years older, younger sister, and then a younger brother. So I'm one of four. And my two younger siblings now live in Los Angeles, which is so unexpected to, like, it's just weird that, I don't know. Of a family that grew up in St. Louis, it's like two of us live in Los Angeles, one lives in New York. My older brother lives in St. Louis. But anyway, it just seems, I don't know why that seems unexpected, but it does. So there you go.
Yeah. Now, why the move to St. Louis? Because Kemper, that's it's an old family in Kansas City, right?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really know that much. This sounds very strange, but I don't know that much about, because I didn't grow up in Kansas City, I feel grateful for that, because my family started a bank years ago, a century ago, I don't know, long time ago. And so that started in Kansas City. Moving to St. Louis, I think, was good. I'm glad my parents did that because it was a new city. Like, it didn't have that.
And you didn't have the baggage.
Yeah, exactly. Not to say that it was, some huge name in Kansas City, but maybe more recognizable in Kansas City than in St. Louis, which is nice. Right. And in St. Louis, it was, I think my dad was, they were planning on only moving there for like 5 years and then ended up staying. So I feel really grateful for that. I don't have, this is boring to say, but I mean, I had a good childhood. You keep wondering how I'm going to finish the sentence. I'm like, I had a good childhood. I mean, so I feel, I'm like really very, very lucky to be able to say that. So
and your folks are still together?
They're still together. They're still alive. I just saw them. They're still together and they're still alive.
Two things usually don't go together because somebody ends up killing somebody.
Well, give it time. Life is long. But we were all just together in, so my younger sister lives in Pasadena with her family. So we all went out to Pasadena for the holidays. And
oh, nice.
It was a weirdly, very weirdly drama-free gathering. I have I don't know how that happened. I mean, not that there are usual like big outbursts, but it was, you'll gossip with one sibling and then you sort of backstab them like with the other sibling. I mean, it's nothing like too bad, but you're double.
Absolutely. There's all kinds of, and there's times when I think about like, I wonder what these fuckers are saying about me.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I know that they're saying stuff, what are you going to do?
I don't know. Yeah.
I personally feel like doing the job you and I have trains you to go, I can't control what people are saying about me. And I mean, and you know, like, cause you get used to it like on the internet and then you can just bring it into like, well, I don't, you know, I think my aunt is judging me and it's like, well, okay, I'll just treat it like somebody on Twitter. You know,
that's exactly, do you know what
I can do about it?
Yeah. I don't know that I've consciously used that, device, that strategy, I guess, but that's really smart because I don't know. When did you first, I first read a meme comment about me when I was on The Office and I was like really upset about, so maybe this was, let's see, 2009 was when I started appearing and it was so mean and I agonized over it for, I don't know, days. And it was just, and the anonymity didn't help. I was still just like, it doesn't matter that I don't know this person. A stranger, it makes it worse, I guess. A stranger said this about me.
And especially having gone through a life of being supported.
Right.
You know what I, you know, like.
Not a
like
divisive nobody, figure.
Yeah, nobody was yelling at me like, you're a fucking idiot, you know, or you're ugly. You know, I certainly wasn't coddled, but I mean, but you do, you step out into this really weird arena where all of a sudden, like, people have no qualms whatsoever about saying just heinous shit about
you. Heinous shit. And it's like, are you still learning? That I don't think people are going around saying really, I don't think that you and I are like, having to trudge through all this negative but still at the same time.
For me, nobody cares that much anymore. So they're not weighing in.
But it's just this. You just can't, if you're going to be upset about it, then you can't look at it. Like you just said, you can't control what they're saying. You have to understand that, you know, this isn't somebody, you don't know this person. You don't know anything about them. So you can't really listen to what they're saying for that very reason, I guess. I don't know, but that's hard.
Yeah, there's a balance because I don't think it's bad to hear criticism. So, you know what I mean? So like, I know like Conan, for instance, says he doesn't read anything, you know, but he also too was like on the bow of an icebreaker, you know, of like critical, just in an ice flow of just critical garbage for so long.
Right.
So I can understand it. But there's time, but when he, you know, he'll say, don't ever, you know, because I've said like, oh, I, you know, this something, somebody said something shitty, mm-hmm. you know, and he'll say, don't read any of it. And there's part of me, it's like, no, I, you know, I do want to read some of it. Like,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like some of it, I feel like I can at least filter through the healthy part of myself that will be like, do they have a point?
Absolutely. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah. And that feels healthy. Because yeah. like you, I was not bullied as a kid. I don't feel that I had to overcome some major like circumstances that where I felt like I'm not good enough. I'm the underdog, whatever it was. So it does come maybe as a greater shock when people say mean things about you. But the other thing is that so much of it does seem unfounded. But then there are other parts, like with anything, like a director giving you notes, whatever it is. Well, you have to
yeah.
listen to that. I mean, that's
right.
that's healthy criticism. So yeah, I guess it's just the, we're in this, I mean, this is nothing new. We're in this age now where just anybody can say anything.
Yeah.
And again, whether they're in a position to or not, then.
Right.
The thing is, though, what did I do? I responded on my, like years ago, I posted like a trailer for an animated thing I was in. And someone, like a commenter said, you can't, like, this is an ad. You need to hashtag ad. And I took the bait. I was like, I emailed my agent. Do I need to be, am I going to be sued? Do I need to do ad? They said, no, this isn't an ad. It's like a trailer for the, and so I responded to the person. I said, you know what? I checked and it's not an ad. And like, sweet, silly me, because I was I thought, oh, I'm going, there was a part of me that I think was indignant and wanted to let it be known that I wasn't doing anything
yes.
wrong. But then I also assumed.
Fuck me. No, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly.
How dare you? You
know? How dare you? Under the guise of like civil discussion.
Right, right.
And then the person was not interested in like, didn't actually, of course the person didn't actually care whether I was hashtagging it as an ad.
No.
They just wanted to like get in and I fell for it. So it's, it feels like when I'm removed from it, it feels like far away and like, oh, that seems like a waste of time. But when you're in it, when you're actually affected by it, I don't know if you've gotten affected. It's very, very upsetting. Like,
I mean, I don't do it so much anymore, but I definitely used to get, I'd argue with people, especially because I used to be a lot more publicly political.
Uh-huh.
Because I liked being publicly political, and it's a big part of kind of like who I was. It's still a big part of who I am, but it's less a part of who I am because I'm so tired.
Well,
I'm so very tired. You know,
but I wanted to ask you if, why have you become, is it because of, yeah, like I've, that's enough or.
It's enough. And I think that I had some sort of idea that I could do something to make things better.
No. Yeah.
There's truth to, you have a platform, mm-hmm. whether it's whatever, you know, whether you're on a TV show and you're giving interviews mm-hmm. or whether you have a Twitter account with lots of followers mm-hmm. or Instagram or TikTok or whatever. And hey, while we're here, why don't I let people know that teachers should be paid more or something, you know, and for me, it was, you know, a lot of it would be things like guns are a problem.
Oh,
you know, like I used to get very engaged about guns and then I stopped. And I mean, and it got ugly and weird and scary, DMs, scary DMs and things like that. So I kind of backed off. I made a crack. I mean, I made an observation about QAnon people.
Mm-hmm.
And my ex-wife got calls at on our home phone from people asking for me, when I just was like, I just, you know, made a kind of a character judgment on people who, you know, believe in fantasies.
I know.
I can't do that much. I mean, I help raise money and things like that. And I help, you know, in the last presidential election helped sign up poll workers and sign up canvassers. And, it was in a way that there was tangible, like, oh, this thing that I posted got this many responses and can be linked to this much money. But in terms of like following it, like I used to every day and it's just too much. It's too debilitating and humans are too basically corrupt.
No, I know.
That's the other thing I've gotten to is humans are basically corrupt.
And, I know.
You know, you just kind of got to like, oh yeah, everybody's going to going to skim a little.
I know. And it feels, that feels really discouraging because there, like you said, you feel, okay, I'm visible. There's a platform. Yes. Like post a selfie of with you with your dinner, but then also encourage people to go out and vote. That seems pretty benign.
Yeah.
But then it's, and I have no idea if something like that moves the needle or not. I don't know what, never, like my whole life, I've not been that political or outspoken in any, and not about really anything that has to do with politics or any of, certainly nothing, I don't weigh in on gun stuff. I mean, like before 2016, never did. Yeah. And so then it felt very new, but also urgent, especially for our last, 2020?
Yeah.
Election to do something because it did feel urgent, right?
Felt pretty important. Yeah.
And so that was my first like dance with people disagreeing with you in a really sort of aggressive way.
Or sticking your neck out in any way,
But I do come back to the thought that like, I don't know, which is I don't understand what social media, if it is a net positive, because are you just in an echo chamber? Like, so if you tell people to say, go out and vote, are most of the people you're talking to already going out? And then the people who aren't going to vote, they're not
going to
vote.
Preach into the choir.
Kind of. So that feels, but I understand, well, especially if you're getting phone calls to your house, well, no, then you have to take your foot off the gas. And that's depressing because it's like, why can't you just speak intelligently with people about this? But
right. And also, there's also an element of it where you're succumbing to bullying.
I know.
Basically. And it's like, you're not supposed to do that.
I know.
You know, like we teach our kids, like stand up to bullying. And then, but then it comes to like, oh no.
This is dangerous.
Crazy people.
Yeah, crazy people
who love guns.
I know.
Knowing where, my kids live.
Yeah. And then that's a different issue. And like, and necessarily so.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey, Conan O'Brien here. My travel series, Conan O'Brien Must Go, is premiering on Max on April 18th. This is a show that kind of grew out of the podcast, as you guys know.
Yeah.
And I traveled to Norway, Argentina, Thailand, and Ireland to meet some of my fans that I met through the podcast. I have a lot of adventures. I become a gaucho, a Muay Thai kickboxer. I'm an old lighthouse keeper. I'm a soccer player. I even visit my ancestral town in Ireland. Hmm. They've asked me never to return. You might even see a certain associate producer in my travels. You don't want to miss it. I love saying that when you might be fine with missing it, but I think you'll like it. Conan O'Brien Must Go comes out on Max on April 18th.
Can't you tell my love's a-growing?
But we were saying, because it seems like a conversation I have with a lot of people, oh, I don't get social media, but I do not understand it. And also, I can tell you this, is that it has made me dumber, just all of it. Just taking up my time scrolling through that instead of just reading a book is really idiotic.
Oh, there's books that if they could speak, they would, in my house, that just would like be constantly making fun of me.
Yes.
Remember when you bought me? How you were interested in me and all the knowledge I could impart to you?
I know. Instead of, and then it is also this, oh boy, when did you join Twitter? Was it like at the very beginning?
It was kind of early-ish. I think it was, I want to say like, I think it was 2010.
Oh, I think yeah, that feels early.
2009. Yeah.
Yeah.
I still am fairly active on Twitter and I like Twitter.
Oh, you do? Yeah, I'm scared of it.
I do. I found, well, I mean, aside from, you know, from the things like when there's a revolution in the Mideast, you know, when you get better news more quickly from that. You know, when there's things happening in the streets or like in Ukraine, you find things out there on Twitter.
Well, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Aside from that important part of it, I made a lot of friends. And I became part of like a joke writing club. Mm-hmm. Like we would just write jokes for each other, you know, like, and that, you know, and there's a lot of just like dumb jokes that I come up with that I'm not going to jot them down and keep them in a book. I just put it on, you know, like
Twitter.
And it's just because it's fun. I like, you know, making funny jokes.
And that part feels like a good use of it. But do you know what I want to say, ask you is, I don't know. I don't write jokes, but do you have to like triple check to make sure nothing can be misinterpreted? Like, is there any fear?
You learn. I learned there's certain jokes that aren't funny anymore.
Right.
I know lots of men my age, and it's almost always men my age who are in comedy who just like that's another reason why I like being on Twitter is because I know like I would sometimes be at the show that I worked on and a man my age or a little younger would pitch a joke and I would be able to say, oh, no, no.
Yeah.
The kids aren't laughing at that anymore.
Right.
I was kind of, you know, eavesdropping on the conversation of younger people.
Right. Which is necessary. Yes.
Yeah. So, And it makes you grow and it forces you to kind of, and it forces to reassess your own kind of values and things. But then also too, I make jokes that like people in my life will be like, what are you doing? Like that's really dirty or that's really gross or that's really stupid. And I'm just like, what do you want? You know,
what do you want? It's not going to sit in the drawer. I'm going to say it. My favorite, because I'm on Instagram, not Twitter, but I do really like posting things that you know no one's really going to think is that funny besides the people you know really well.
Yes.
And I just, is satisfying to me in some stupid way. It's probably not savvy. Like if you're from like a brand perspective.
I mean, the amount of time that I think using my social media account strategically is non-existent. And my fiance is like, you got to get more Instagram followers. And I'm like,
By
posting videos of me saying funny things?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
A music video. I know, that's it. And so it's like, well, okay, if I did that, yes, I might attract more followers. But
how fucking thirsty is that?
Well, that's what I think. And some people are fantastic
Here I am again, hoping you like me. That's our whole fucking life, though. I mean, that's...
Do you remember when... I always think of this because when you could... I'm not on Facebook, but when I used to be and you could write on someone's wall on Facebook and it could be like, you're the best, happy birthday or whatever. And I remember thinking at the time, this is insane. This is a self-love fest and people are like allowing these things to be seen. And now it is just... not only customary, but to be expected to just post things that you're doing, pat yourself on the back. It's outrageous. I do it. I mean, I don't know if you do it, but it's like so twisted and bonkers and like not healthy.
Well, you know, it's there's varying levels of it.
There are varying levels.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Can't you tell my love's a growing?
Now that we're talking about being in the public eye and just kind of like having the urge to get in front of people, when did that sort of start for you?
Early.
You know, you were a good student and you were kind of like, and you were, you know, an athlete and stuff. And like, how does, you know, being a comedy person fit into that?
I always say, so Michael is like truly what I would call a comedy nerd, my husband. He... Total nerd.
Oh boy.
But knows, just has the whole like lexicon. He just knows every comedy movie ever, every comedian, and he's always shocked at the things I haven't seen or comedians I haven't heard of. And I always say to him, because I had a normal childhood with friends, that's like my comeback. But it's sort of true. So when I say that I like to perform or I guess be in the public eye from an early age, you know, I did the thing like a lot of households do, which is we would put on shows for our parents and invite the neighborhood parents over and just like plays in the front hall and Christmas like choreographed dances for like our Christmas show and all that stuff. And then I was always in like the musicals in elementary school and then middle school and high school. I was always in the plays, usually the musicals. And I think that sort of goes hand in hand because I was also like an athlete. I ran track and I played field hockey, but I really loved, this is sick, but I loved the praise that came with it. So when I say that, I'm like, oh, you like the attention. So that's what I mean when I say I liked performing from an early age, because I did like being in the, again, I'm not proud of this, but I enjoyed being in the limelight. So.
Well, if you were shitty at it, no one would have said much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. I hope so. I hope I would have been discouraged, but it was something that like, yeah, I did always like performing but it wasn't until college that I got more interested, I guess, in comedy, because I don't know how you were like, I think that my family's funny. I don't know if it's the same. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that we have the same sense of humor and we understand, like we make each other laugh but there's no like professional comedians in my family, in my lineage. There's no like show business.
Right.
I do think like my parents are extremely funny people, though they don't earn money from being funny. They don't do professional.
Sure, sure.
But it was that. So I think that when I was in college, I was in my improv group. You know, every college, I guess, has an improv troupe. And I was—
Well, you're younger than me because I think that's a more of a recent thing. You know, because improv was—
Yeah.
You had to explain what it was to people
true.
When I started doing it. And now everyone's like, oh, fucking improv.
Absolutely. Oh, my college now has, I think, like, I'm not— kidding, like 11 improv troops.
Yeah.
When I was there, there was one.
Yeah,
exactly right. I was coming in at the era of like, oh, we know what this is. And my group was called Quip Fire. Like, we're firing quips. See?
Quips, yep, sure.
Quips, firing. And I really, really liked it. And that was I felt like I was good at it. And that was my introduction to, like, we went to Chicago for one of our tours and I got to see Second City and Improv Olympic. And I felt like, oh, this is really something that I didn't know you could do after college
and you can
continue to do as an adult. So it was really in college that my eyes were opened, but I felt
this
is feasible, you know?
And it's also really fun.
Oh
like
my
that,
gosh. It's
for
so
me
fun.
Was always,
yeah.
It isn't even so much, you know, I thought like, oh, I'm going to be on SNL or
right.
anything like that. And it was weird to me, especially because I'm from Chicago. So
right.
it was all there. Like,
right.
it wasn't like I went anywhere to find it. It just kind of was there. And friends of mine that were already kind of acting and that I was in film school with started to do it.
Yep.
And then I'd go see it and I'd just be like, holy shit, that's fun.
Right?
I don't, you know, yeah. And it's just like, I want to learn to do that. And then I want to do that. And then I want to hang out with those people.
I know.
And the hanging out with the people was always... I mean, even to this day, making TV shows, you know, the best part of working for Conan O'Brien was then I went to work every day with literally some of the funniest people in the world.
That's right.
In the world.
I imagine. Like,
you know, and we just got to fuck around and make each other laugh. That was like 80% of the day. And then 20% was, well, we got to do a show.
We got to do the tech checks.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, so, it's unbelievably lucky, fortunate to be able to do that. And that was the thing, was that in this group, like I had been on sports teams and I had, like I said, done like the school musicals. But improv in particular, I felt there's, sort of necessarily have to form a bond because you're going up there. The whole point, obviously, like you don't know what is going to happen. There has to be a trust there that's established, and you are all on the same wavelength. You do find the same things funny. And like, if you meet another improviser, this sounds really just corny and stupid, but you kind of speak their shorthand. Like you kind of have their number already, even if you might not actually have ever met them. You kind of get it. Yeah. And so to be able to be in, especially for a job, like you just described, you get to go to work with these people. Well, that's like insanely lucky. And it didn't ever, I mean, I too didn't grow up thinking, oh, I want to be on Saturday Night. I watch Saturday Night Live every Saturday, but I didn't ever think, oh, I want to be on that. That just felt like, oh, these are, I don't even know what these people are or how you get there.
I was in classes with people that had like moved to Chicago because they wanted to be on SNL.
Oh, right.
And that was always like, I'd be like, oh, shit. This is like, I'm just here for fun.
You not think, oh, I want to take this to a professional level?
At a certain point, I knew there were people that were doing this for a living and people that I knew specifically. Like, I remember, you know, there's a guy named Ken Campbell who was a Second City guy. And he like, there were like, I think it was turtle races at this bar. And he hosted these turtle races. And I knew him and he's a great guy. And he got a job on a Fox show called Herman's Head.
Yes. Which,
do you remember that show?
I remember that show, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a guy and there were like different characters playing the different voices in his head.
Yes.
And like Ken got on. So it's like, I know that guy.
Yeah.
I, you know, like I've hung out with that guy and there he is on TV and everybody's talking, you know, and everyone's speculating like how much money is he making? Because no one had any money and we're all like.
And you automatically assume they're making $1 million an episode, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I thought.
Like that guy, he's got to be rich now, you know, like Jesus, all set.
And seeing that become, it's a weird thing. Like when you see someone, you know. Television, it feels like, what did it do? Did it change your mind about?
A little bit, you know, but I mean, it didn't make me, because there were people that were definitely like career oriented.
Right. Yes.
And I just kind of felt like, I don't think, well, it's just not me. Like, it's just not me to like do the whole, I felt like if something's going to happen, it's going to happen because of work.
Right.
Because of the work that we're doing as a group.
Right,
and
right.
I was in groups where that was like a divide among the people. Like some people were like, we're not getting enough casting agents in here. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. Let's just keep being funny and trying to get people in the door, you know?
And did you have an idea of like when it came to, you know, paying the rent, was that just separate? Was it like, I want to keep doing this because it's fun, but I am not interested in like monetize. I don't know what word
I didn't have any concrete plans.
Yeah.
Just was kind of, you know, taking things as they went and opportunities. Cause you know, there was a show in Chicago called The Real Life Brady Bunch. Mm-hmm. It was at the Annoyance Theater and it went to New York and it went to LA and I got out of Chicago and started making money as a performer through that.
Yeah.
But that wasn't like something that I calculated doing.
Right. Yeah, right.
It just happened next to me.
Right.
And I was, and I, at one point when it was going to New York and I knew there was an opening, I was like, hey, I could do that, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, sure. Come along, you know?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was $600 a week, which at the time just was like mind-blowing amount of money, you know.
Yep.
But then it just kind of built from there. And I, you know, I have a specific memory of being out here with people from that I came out here with people from Chicago, and we went to the beach. And I remember driving in my Toyota pickup with like four people in the back and two people in the cab with me, looking at houses in the hills on the drive and thinking that, you know, like not every one of those people is Steven Spielberg or Steven Seagal, you know, like this is an industry, literally, you know,
right.
So there's something to do here, you know?
Yeah.
And I had gone to film school too.
Yes.
So I was already kind of used to the idea of making a living within the, whether I'm doing props or whether I'm on, you know, or whether I'm writing a screenplay or whether I'm on the thing, you know?
Right. So, in some capacity, you would be involved in that industry. Oh, see, that is, I think in my mind, I wanted, once I started taking improv classes at the People's Improv Theater here in New York, doing stuff like that, I thought the goal is to support myself through commercial work, which, you know, obviously is a pretty common route if you can for actors. But that was the only, but beyond that, I think I was similar to you in that with the improv shows and the groups that I was in here in New York, it was like, it was almost more of a social engagement. I mean, not to be, but it was it was creative. And how can we put on the best show possible and create the, you know, best art? But it was also, it wasn't about like, but let's get so-and-so in here to like sign us or whatever.
That felt
like a different mindset.
Right. And and one that I didn't know how to do that anyway. So
I don't have that brain.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, and people who do can do both things well, something creative, but also have that business.
Yeah.
I just don't have it. So I'm fascinated by them.
The only thing, because I've spent my, most of my life and most of my adult life envying those people.
Yeah.
Like the people that like, just have to be doing something and have to be, you know, like have an iron in the fire that's getting red hot and that's going to, and I am, and this is all just probably total rationalization because I mean, I have to force myself to be that more than I would normally be because I don't have a job right now.
Right.
You know, I mean, I do this podcast and stuff, but like, I don't have a regular gig right now. So I have to push myself more than I normally would.
Yeah.
And, but I do take, I at one point looked, I was like, okay, who in my life is like super driven that way?
Yep.
And I made a little list in my head and then I went, now, which of those people is happy?
Oh yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, none of them.
None of them. So
none of them.
I know.
You know, they all have a hole that cannot be filled.
Right.
You know?
That's right. And
now,
so
I don't
that,
know what the answer is.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, it's just so I don't feel bad at feeling like occasionally like I am a bum, you know?
I can't believe I fell into this trap, but last week I was just like, gotta make some life changes, you know? And like, I for 2 days I was convinced I should switch careers because for that reason, for it's like, I'm not working right now. And I don't know that I have that. I don't want to say it's not ambition, but it's the energy that it takes to sort of go after certain things. And we all know we're speaking of those friends and acquaintances who do have both. And I'm like tired looking at them because I am tired most of the time. That's another thing. I am tired most of the time.
You've got two kids that are under the age of seven.
Well, that's what I don't understand. How is any parent who doesn't have that, or I don't even know what happens as they get older. It's probably more emotionally draining. How is everyone not tired? Maybe everyone just is and people don't complain about it like I do.
Right, right.
I don't know. But yes, that combination, again, I keep saying ambition, but it is sort of what it is. But it's a lot.
It is.
And,
it's
and
a
to also
business-minded. You know, like driven to a goal-oriented kind of thing, as opposed to sit around, let's see what happens. You know, maybe the phone will ring and something good will happen.
Exactly.
You know?
And that, I don't know about you, I have been, whether it's something I made up in my head or been told, but I feel like that mindset, the one you just described where it's like, oh, let's see, is like somehow not good. When in fact, I think that's exactly my mindset, which is like, I'm going to, of course, money is always the issue. You have to work to be paid. But if you're in like a dry spell, then you feel like, Well, for, I don't know if you go down a spiral. I do. Of, I'll never work again.
Oh, fuck yes. Fuck yeah. Everybody. I once saw an interview, and it, I don't know what they were in together. Gene Hackman and Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And Dustin Hoffman said, when every job's done, there's a part of me that feels like I'll never do it again.
Oh, wow.
And I believed him. Like, yeah. I don't think he was like, I really... And that I was like, okay, good.
Yeah,
you know,
good.
Like, because, no, I, you know, because I go like, I haven't done anything. Like, right. Everything I've done is, you know, like, pointless. Who gives a shit? Right. You know, and like, there's no market out there for this thing that I am, you know?
Right!
And, you know, and then it's like, oh, calm down, you know?
You have to calm down. I mean, not you, but everyone, because what, you know, you do what you do. But I also, I had this thing where, like I said, I'm 42. And I had this thing growing up where I just never, it wasn't that I thought I would die, but I just never envisioned my life past 40. I just didn't have an idea of what that would, I don't know. I can't describe it. It's more just like, oh, well, I'll be 37 then. Yeah, 30. Oh, I don't know what happens after 40. I don't understand. So now I feel like, oh, wait, but I am 42. And everyone says, oh, no, like, you know, the women who age and also work in entertainment, oh, it's harder on them. I guess it is. I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's men too. But you do feel like.
It's way worse for women.
It is way worse for women.
A thousand times worse for women.
It's awful. I just saw a picture. I just walked by the subway and there was this. Bryan Cranston is in something and he's like.
He has a beard. He looks like Santa and he looks like an old prospector. It's a show called like The Judge or something. It's like he's a New Orleans judge and his son. Gets in, like, accidentally kill somebody or something, you know.
And I'm sure, and I'm his biggest fan, and I guarantee you it's a phenomenal show. But I just don't think you'd see that woman, that image of that woman with the beard.
No.
And the,
when women look like that, they're, like, touted for their bravery. Like, they get awards for being brave. Yeah. No, it's...
And they did this to them. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but I mean... It is different for character actors. And you know, and like you and I are character actors, we're comedic people, but it's like, it is hard. And it's more so for like men who are pretty. It's like the pretty people, their like shelf life is shorter. I think it's rare that there's a pretty person that can get kind of past what this incredibly unfair you know, rating system says we're like, oh, you know what? You're beyond pretty. You're not pretty anymore. Like they're the ones that really get screwed by things.
Right. But, yeah, exactly right. Yeah. But then it's a weird thing to navigate. But I felt like I had more of that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. In like anyone in my 20s. And I don't want to be, again, like discouraging to anyone. But I don't feel like that. I'm tired.
Yeah. Well, and I want to ask because... For you, like, say, like, in the next 10 years, like, if you could pick what happens, and I don't just mean job, I mean, like, job and kids and, you know, like, all of it, you know, like, thinking of, like, some, you know, you pick a job for Michael if you want to, for your husband if you want to, but, like, what do you, like, what would fix it for you?
I was just going to bring up the idea of, like, I don't know if you do this, but, you know... With a household, you say, okay, well, let's make a 3 to 5 year plan or even, and then I often want to reduce that to, let's just make a year plan because I don't know what jobs are going to come up for either of us. I don't know what is, you know, as opposed to my parents who moved to St. Louis, my dad had a job at a bank. It was pretty stable and like predictable, meaning that he was going to, we weren't going to have to move again. That's what their lives called for, staying in one place. I feel like as actors and writers that, you know, of course you might have, and as so many people do for any job, have to move according to where the job takes you. Okay, so it's hard for me to say, okay, I'm going to move to this place and raise my children here because I don't know if a job or an opportunity is going to come up that would take us away for a year. So that always makes it difficult for me to make a plan. And I like your idea of more that it's like I'm accepting that not that the boat is drifting, but that it's there's only so much that I can control, and I just got to remain a little bit agile so that I can like stupid use of the word, but pivot when I need to. And so, in answer to the question, in the next 10 years, I think what I would like is, and this is very specific, to have a job on a sitcom where I'm not there, it's not taking up my entire life, but I'm earning a paycheck and I can also be present with my family. So that's that sounds like, oh yeah, hello, who wouldn't like that? Everyone would like that.
Right.
But it is, I think that is very difficult to accomplish. And I hope that I can accomplish it because it is important to me to be, you know, with my kids as they're growing up. And but it's also important to me, both for like just personal reasons and creative reasons I want to work, and also for financial reasons I want to work. So it is important. I've many times thought, oh, Ellie, should you just, you know, revisit working once you have run out of money and need to at a later time? But then I think, no, it is more than financial. That I do, like you, enjoy going to work with smart and funny people, and I like creating things. So that's there. And so I think the answer is, whether it's New York or Los Angeles, because I feel like those are the two most plausible places.
Yeah.
I want my kids to have a yard. Again, very concrete. And I want to be able to have some type of job that I'm able to report to. I don't want to be the boss of it. I don't want to be, you know, in charge of other people. I want to be in charge of myself. And I want to be an employee who enjoys her job. That was a little bit rambling, a little bit very specific, a little bit totally vague. But I would say that that's the answer for me. And it does feel like, I mean, my children will be so old in 10 years. And it's like, but for me, I don't want to go that long without working. I want to have, you know, the next chapter, I guess.
Yeah.
So but that's what it would look like for me.
It's a good answer. I mean, it's a good answer.
I don't know if
because,
it is.
Yeah. Because it is like, that's, I mean, home life work balance. Like, people talk about it and it's a cliche because, it's really fucking hard. And when you get a job, especially like in our thing, what kind of job you get really matters. If you get a job on CSI, say goodbye to your kids, you know, until they, you know, you see them graduate or something.
Exactly,
because you have to work such long, stupid hours. And, you know, and that, I mean, and I had the benefit of that was, again, one of the reasons how I'm really lucky. The Conan show, I was home by dinner for, you know, 11 years.
Yep.
I was home for dinner.
That's invaluable, I think.
Yeah. And that was like the like real formative years of my kids, you know, like, I'm really lucky in that way. Whereas if I had been doing a single camera show, I don't know, you know,
I
would be much more of a stranger, you know.
And that's the part that's difficult because we are so lucky to have careers where like, oh, maybe you are in the position to choose what job you want to take. And, you know, that doesn't always happen that you can say no to a job or yes, but it does feel like if there's only one shot at like when they're young, they're only young for this long. And so like, if I said yes to a job that turned out to be just like all consuming, I think I would be in a lot of dramatic, but I would be in a lot of pain because it would feel like I didn't have to take this job. I could have waited for something, you know, that took up less time to form. But you don't really know that until you're in it. So that makes it a little tricky. But I don't know. I mean, I always wonder, like, if money were no object and you could retire now and only work on like quote unquote passion projects, I still think I would want to be I keep calling it a sitcom, but you know what I mean? Not like a laugh track, but just like
a TV comedy,
I think is what, I don't think it's like something more elaborate than that. I think that is what I like doing. And I don't know if you feel the same way where it's like, I feel like, okay, I can do that.
No, I absolutely do. Absolutely do. I mean, because between me, I got things that I'm trying to develop. I get, I get different, you know, ideas for different shows that I'm pushing on, just trying to get something to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other part of me that's just like, oh, why doesn't the phone ring and somebody say, come be on my stupid fucking comedy that's
going to
be a runaway hit. And then I can just like,
yes,
show up and feel bad that I'm doing such bad work, but getting tons of money for it.
And it's set up and it's there. You just have to drive
and
to
it's
it.
There. And it's like, I can't, it's like, look, this thing is going to be popular. I could either, be watching it and going like, this is terrible, or be watching and going, this is terrible, but, you know, look at this house. You know?
Oh, my, but that's it. And nobody faults anyone for anything anymore. That's not true.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah,
what
yeah.
In terms of like selling out or whatever, it's like everyone does everything. So yeah, there's a lot of bad TV out there, but there's a lot of good TV out there.
I'd much rather make good TV, and that's my first choice. But then when I get lazy, that's when I think, can't somebody just hire me to be an actor
that's
in a TV show?
Absolutely.
I just have to show up and, you know, preferably multicam, so yes. I only really have to work more than 4 hours for just 2 days a week.
And maybe you make enough in a year so that you don't have to do it for more than a year. So you do it for a year and you know you're only doing it for a year. Right. And then that's digestible.
You do it for a few years and then you're, and then you make some goofy little show for a streamer that, you know, you're all your friends.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then but then to get to that point, what do you have to do? Because that's the thing where it's like, does someone else create the goofy show? Because I don't know if I want to create it, but I want to be in it. So I want someone to do that.
Oh, no. I want to give notes to somebody who actually does all the work. And then when I'm ready to leave, I go like, all right, see you tomorrow.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You guys stay here and write it. Bye bye.
But let's be honest. Some people want to do that.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people we know who enjoy doing that. And burning the midnight oil, that is. Not everyone can be the boss.
Yeah. Well, I have kept you for so long, and I really appreciate it. It's been great talking to you. You know, this format is sort of, you know, questions are. And, you know, the final question, because I think we've answered the other two.
Yes.
But it's the what have you learned part. It's like when people ask you for advice or, you know, like if you think about like, you know, what someone should take away from what you've experienced.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea what that is?
When it comes to work, and especially if we're talking about getting started in entertainment or something like that, I think this will sound dorky, but it is to bet on yourself because you have to. Because otherwise, no one else will take a chance on you. And again, even though a lot of what you and I have talked about is how we or I might feel tired and I don't have the energy to do this, when you're starting out, well, of course you need to have that energy. You need to have that verve and ambition to get started. And whether you feel it or not, whether it's just fake, you should bet on yourself so that you project an air of confidence that people will feel good working with you. The other thing I've learned is sort of more recent, and you and I discussed it, which is an acceptance of not being able to control everything and feeling grateful that I get to have the job I have. Because especially, I think there were times on shows that I've worked on where I felt so frustrated and angry that I couldn't control the schedule, I couldn't control the... I didn't have a say in certain things. I couldn't control people, as we also discussed, were saying online mostly online, not really to my face. And accepting that you can't control those pieces is really calming and liberating because it lifts so much stress off your chest where you accept that you can do you're in control of doing your job well. And part of your job is to put up with what you might perceive as nonsense, but you just accept that because overall the position is so lucky. So count your blessings that you get to have, you know, this situation and accept that, you know, the other things are beyond your control. So those are the two pieces of, I guess, wisdom I feel that I've acquired. Yes.
Well, again, good answers. I have a little.
You have a 1 to 10.
I'm keeping. I'm like checking. Like, okay, that's a good one.
She did mention this, right?
Yes. B+.
And also,
we got to the end here. B+. Good job.
You know what? I don't want to be the A student. If anything, you should have taken that away from our discussion. We're not interested in being the A.
Everyone on this podcast that gets an A from me, I feel like they're trying too hard.
Way too hard.
I never go beyond. above C as a host. Oh, like C+. That's
I. Thank you for having me, Andy.
Well,
this
thank
has been
you
a pleasure.
Thank you. It has very much so for me, and I hope it was for all of you out there. And I will be back next week with three more questions. Ha ha!
The Three Questions with Andy Richter is a Team Coco production. It is produced by Sean Doherty and engineered by Rob Schulte. Additional engineering support by Eduardo Perez and Joanna Samuel. Executive produced by Joanna Solitaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross. Talent booking by Paula Davis and Gina Batista, with additional booking support from Maddie Ogden. Research by Alyssa Grawl. Don't forget to rate and review and subscribe to The Three Questions with Andy Richter wherever you get your podcasts.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.